Welcome to the Food Matters Live podcast, where we showcase the innovations, the big ideas, and the visionaries in the food industry. We dig deep, we look to the future and the past, and we question everything that we think we know about food. I'm Stefan Gates. I'm a food science writer, TV presenter, and a gastronaut. Now, startups are often regarded as the lifeblood of innovation, introducing disruptive ideas that challenge the status quo and push the boundaries of what's possible. But behind every successful startup, there's a support system working to fuel growth and unlock their potential. Accelerators and investors, beyond mere financial backing, often provide startups with a blend of mentorship, guidance, and resources. They try to navigate founders through the treacherous waters of early stage development, steer them towards sustainable growth, and hopefully enable them to tackle some of the industry's most pressing challenges. But how do accelerators and investors go beyond the numbers? What opportunities can they provide startups? And how do they identify those that possess the power to shape our future for the better? Well, with me to discuss this are four absolutely fantastic guests. Mark Durno is managing partner of the Agrofood Fund, of the global accelerator and investor Rockstart. Hello there, Mark.
Hi there.
Great to have you. Now, admittedly, this is a bit of a loaded panel because we have three guests who've all worked with Rockstart in growing their startups. So first of all, we have Priya Buller, COO and co-founder of Plan Boo, which provides carbon removal technology to landowners in the tropics. Hello there, Priya.
Hey, Stefan.
Great to have you. We have Philippe Berker, co-founder of Climate Farmers, whose aim is to drive the transition towards regenerative farming in Europe. Hello there, Philippe.
Good afternoon from Berlin. Good to be here.
Excellent from Berlin. And we have John Smedegaard. Now, he is CEO and co-founder of Cordulus, a company delivering hyperlocal weather data to the agriculture industry. Hello there, John.
Hello.
Now, Mark, first of all, how does Rockstart define itself? Are you an accelerator, early stage investor, or just an office with funky coffee?
Yeah, thanks. This is a question we get often. We are quite hard to peg, and it's even we embrace that a little bit. We are an accelerator VC, which ultimately means that we are investing at the very early stage in startups at pre-seed, and then continuing to support our portfolio companies through to growth phase, so that's Series B. So we would define ourselves in that way, and a purpose-driven investor at that. So we really focus on helping founders to drive a transformation to a more sustainable and regenerative future.
Yeah. Why is an accelerator needed? I mean, it's a very pointed word. Does it accelerate?
Well, I mean, ultimately, what we've got out there are tens of thousands of very talented and forward-thinking founders who are trying to drive impactful technologies, new business models to help us mitigate climate change challenges. And that's quite a rocky terrain to navigate. So where accelerators and investors come in and play a crucial role is helping to identify and mitigate barriers that might be blocking these impact-driven founders from being able to address the challenges that they're setting out to address. So Our role is really to provide startups with specialized resources, with mentorship, with industry-specific expertise to help them accelerate development and hopefully navigate the rocky terrain of trying to build an impactful startup and solution.
Now, this word impact is quite important, isn't it? So is it important to have an organization like an accelerator as an umbrella organization to be able to foster social change and social impact?
I think in the context of venture-driven solutions, so those are cases that have got very scalable technology or business models where the founders seek to make a massive impact. Yeah, I think accelerators and programs that provide a way of navigating an ecosystem and getting access to skills and expertise that first-time founders in particular might not have come across can be hugely beneficial. I don't want to toot our own horn too much. We're going to hear from some talented founders who have been through a program themselves today. But I have a background myself as a founder, and in the kind of period 2008 to 2016, when I was trying to navigate that territory for the first time, I would have really benefited from having an early stage cheerleader who would be helping me to gain access to the right networks, to be able to understand the right dynamics and when to scale what. And that was part of my own personal motivation for joining at Rockstar and hopefully helping other founders with something that I didn't have myself.
Yeah. Now, and beyond financial support, how do you actively contribute to the growth and success of startups? I mean, you know, mentorship, networks, and strategic guidance. I mean, you could find this anywhere. Why has what you got to offer have a different impact?
Yeah. So we obviously have that capital component where we're investing up to Series B. So that gives us a fairly long term perspective and a structured approach to the collaboration. The accelerator program itself offers customizable support to the founders. So it's ultimately a half year long curriculum, and it helps those founders drive whichever agenda they have for the company within the short term, and do it in a very targeted way. And what sets us apart here is the domain focus. So Rockstar's got three domains that we focus on. One is agri-food, for which I'm responsible. Energy transition is the other, and then emerging technologies, which is more of a deep tech societal focus. So having that really focused domain element allows us to have a targeted approach to networks, have a targeted approach to mentoring and support, a targeted approach to syndication partners. It also allows us to come with a little bit of more industry knowledge and backing than you might have from a more generic program.
Yeah. So what's in it for Rockstar? Is it bigger profits? Do you get greater equity? Are your startups willing to give a bit more to you because of what you offer?
I don't think so, no. I think startups are pretty savvy and founders of startups are working to the interests of the business. So if we provide value, they want to work with us, but ultimately we set out to align with market conform terms, and therefore when we're making investments into companies, we're usually taking apart from the initial investment, which is a relatively small ticket, thereafter we'll take a follow-on position where we're a co-investor, and that allows us to tuck in behind a lead investor, allows the market to decide on those terms. We're basically mimicking those terms. The biggest advantage Rockstar has is that we get to work side by side with these talented founders and get to know them quite well on the journey. So by the time that our portfolio companies are getting to a Series A round, we hope to be a trusted partner, and that's where our edge comes. Then we're in, yeah. We're in the family, so to speak, and we've got a warmer relationship. So I don't think we get preferential terms, but I do think if we do our job well, we hopefully gain the trust of the founders that we work with.
Yeah. And presumably, I mean, there's risk involved in this. I guess that's part of the adventure. You're dealing with pre-seed companies. What's your hit rate? Come on, can you give us any details on how often you succeed with a company, and what are the metrics of that?
Oh gosh, so I can give you in the agri-food context. I can say, because I just got these statistics through the other day. In 2019, when we did our first close, we set out to have a follow-on funding rate, which is a success rate for us at the pre-seed phase, of 75%. So that would be like, 75% of portfolio companies would be able to attract a follow-on investor. Current number is 87%. So the portfolio is outperforming our expectations there. And then our forecasted assumption based on historical data from Rockstar-wide is that ultimately 35% of our portfolio companies go on to have some sort of meaningful event. So that means either an exit or they turn into a viable business in and of themselves and are able to keep going. That's a pretty good hit rate across a 12-year period that Rockstar's been operating. So yeah. So we hold ourselves to that same bar in the agri-food context as well.
Yeah, I mean, I don't want to blow smoke because obviously this is, as I say, a loaded panel, but that sounds pretty good to me. does any of it surprise you? I mean, it's an exciting area, I guess, that there is money around to invest. Are you surprised at how well you've done?
Yeah, usually. if we're, or is that if just we're delighted, exceeding our... Yeah, really, really. I mean, we've been incredibly lucky to work alongside some very talented founders and entrepreneurs, which keeps energy high, it keeps retention high in our team, and it keeps everybody very committed and motivated. And the flywheel starts to feed itself eventually. And I think our job is just to stay on the path, continue to stay true to our values and our thesis. And hopefully the rest kind of takes care of itself. So yeah, I'm immensely proud of what we've been able to achieve so far, and that's with mostly thanks to working with really talented founders. So.
Yeah, well, let's speak to some of those founders and see if they're actually going to slag you off behind your back, because I really want to get to the nuts and bolts of this. So Priya, first of all, can you give us you provide training in biochar carbon removal to farmers and landowners in the tropics. What is biochar? What does this training involve? Can you give us the elevator pitch for the company?
Absolutely. So yeah, essentially at Plan Boo, we're scaling biochar carbon removal in the tropics by combining ancient agriculture and modern day technology. So to do this, we're providing the tools, the training and the technology to enable landowners themselves in tropical regions to turn their agricultural plant waste into biochar, which is like a carbon rich substance, essentially looks like charcoal, and it can be applied directly to soils. So while it looks like charcoal and has some similar properties, when you cook this plant biomass under the right conditions, it's also an IPCC, so the Intergovernmental Panel on Climate Change, approved way to permanently remove carbon from the atmosphere for hundreds to thousands of years. So we've developed a digital tracking system. It's called an MRV. And this allows us to generate internationally certified carbon removal credits, which we then sell to buyers, mostly large companies, middle-sized companies too, on the voluntary carbon market, who all want to do something good for the environment and inevitably reach net zero. So the revenue from the sold carbon credits is then shared with these landowners in the tropics, directing carbon finance to some of the areas that are hardest hit by climate change.
So are you essentially building a marketplace as much as educating?
Yeah, it's not only a marketplace in that way. It's sort of building the technology to enable landowners to make this for themselves. But yes, we are also in the way of retailing directly to buyers.
Yeah. Okay. I mean, it sounds absolutely fascinating. But I'm interested in the accelerator angle to this. Why Rockstar? Why did you choose Rockstar? And what are the reasons behind that?
Mm-hmm. I mean, Rockstar have a fantastic reputation in the agricultural space. And while we work obviously in carbon removal in climate tech, we found that actually connecting with Rockstar opened and broadened our horizons into a huge network in agri-tech as well, which is a space that allows us to actually build out the farmer supplier side of the business that we're doing. So yeah, having them as an investor as well meant that we were able to actually develop trust. And so I'll be perfectly honest, there is a bit of an us and them dynamic with startups and investors, and it's not always an easy relationship to navigate. So this program, although we didn't know it at the beginning, but proved itself to actually be a really important trust building factor, which now it means that if I'm speaking to other investors, which I'm currently doing now, I can go back to any of the team members at Rockstar and say, hey, what do you think? So it's really having them on side and being able to actually progress with that sort of trusted hand on the shoulder, I think has been a big win for us.
Yeah. And Mark talked a big talk about what you know, the support systems that they offer. Does this unfold for you? Do you feel part of a club that looks after each other, or is it more specific than that?
Yeah, for sure. And listen, we've done a few accelerators, and they're not always like this. That's the challenge with generic accelerators. You know, unless you're doing your first and you just want that basic like how to run a business training, they cannot always hit the mark. We were really fortunate with this cohort with Rockstar that we went through that we were given the opportunity to tailor and personalize exactly what we needed. So the team at Rockstar came to us and said, what are you missing? And then they looked into their network, and that was actually really key for us.
Yeah. So it's quite specific, which is quite exciting. Okay, now Philippe, at Climate Farmers, your aim is to build infrastructure that supports agriculture's transition towards regenerative practices. How have you gone about this? What kind of impact have you had so far?
I love that you're asking for the impact and not for the revenue. That's exactly what we're aiming for. I mean,
early stage. I'm thinking early stage here. You know, we're not going to put you under too much stress.
I think we moved beyond that. I mean, essentially, Climate Farmers is a bit of a love story. It started with my love for nature, which led to me and a few friends buying an abandoned village and some hectares of land in Portugal in 2017. And then that caused me to look back at agriculture, which is a context that I grew up in. And that led me to regenerative agriculture before anybody else was talking about it. And I realized back then that it is a solution to many of the issues that we're facing, among them climate change, but even the much deeper ones of basically the broken relationship with the food that we're eating. And that led me to go on a pilgrimage in 2019 and to visit all of the regenerative farmers that I could find in Western Europe. It wasn't that many of them. I found 60 in total out of 10.5 million farmers in the European Union, just to put that in context. And I spent 1 year living, working and staying with these farmers and understanding and asking all of them the same questions, like, how did you get into regenerative agriculture? Why do you think it's not scaling? And how could we help you? And based on that, we developed Climate Farmers with a twofold approach. The one is a nonprofit, which is the Climate Farmers Academy, which is providing farmers with a farmer-to-farmer support network because farmers like to learn from other farmers. And we organize online and offline gatherings there. We also help them to understand their own holistic context and to create a transition plan towards regenerative agriculture. At that point, usually you have to get consultants involved, which costs money. And at that point, usually you have some transition costs. And that's where we are also providing them with transition finance through carbon and biodiversity credits. These we could initially finance with a grant that we got through the Google Impact Challenge on Climate. And then after 1 year, when funding was starting to run low, we got Rockstart in as an impact investor. And it enabled us to build by now the biggest community for regenerative agriculture in Europe. And by now we can say that we have around 120,000 hectares under management. And more important than that, we're basically the go-to address for farmers. And we're the leading contact organization for people that want to work with farmers and want to hear the opinion of farmers. So we organized two conferences where we gathered the European farmer community to come together. We wrote a manifesto for regenerative agriculture with 70 of the leading farmers in Europe signing it. And over the last few months, we have been advising the European Commission together with the Club of Rome and working very closely on the European Green New Deal. And I'm very happy that we managed last week to push through the Nature Restoration Law, the so far most progressive nature restoration law in European history, where we were representing the voice of the regenerative farming community. And now our goal is basically to move forward from here and to bring this voice further and to start scaling regenerative agriculture on large scale.
Again, really exciting project. Now, my question for you is really a sort of nuts and bolts one. What stage of the process did you start working with Rockstar? And how did you find them? Were you trying to convince them to take you on, or was it the other way around? And how does all of that unfold?
Yeah, that's actually, it's a funny one because I found them 9 years ago, or they found me actually back then, because Rockstar invested in the very first startup that I ever worked in after university, which was called Peerby back then. So my very first working day of my life after university was in the Rockstar headquarters back then in Amsterdam. And I know from the founder, Dan, that they have been supporting them or him over a very long period of time, and that they have an understanding that startups, especially if you're working on the systems angle, just need time. So that was the starting point that got us interested in Rockstar. And then essentially we were speaking with Mark, and there was two things that we really liked about the conversations with Mark more than with other VCs they were speaking with. And that was that Mark was a founder. He learned how to scale a startup and how to crash and burn it, which is both very valuable for us.
Absolutely.
And he's the son of a farmer. And I think that was for us even the more important one, right? Like we're really farmers first, and we really want someone that understands that what we're doing, we're not doing to make cash very quickly. We're doing to put farmers back in the center of society. And we needed to have an investor that understands this and that also agrees with us and that really understands the value that farmers are bringing in our society and the issue that we have in our society of not focusing enough on actually cherishing the people that feed us all. And with Rockstar was one of the few investors where we had the feeling they get it, or very specifically, I would say Mark gets it. And that's why we decided to go with them back then.
Yeah. So Mark, Philippe says he doesn't want to make cash quickly. Are you sitting there clenching your fists and going, "You didn't tell me that"? How does that work? You're an investor. You need returns, don't you?
No. Yeah. I'm still trying to calm myself down after all the flattery. I really appreciate your comments, Philippe. It's very kind of you. I'm embarrassed. If you could see me, my cheeks are pink here. Yeah, no, look, we're investing in ag tech and food tech startups at the pre-seed phase who are looking to drive positive impact. None of that says let's do an exit in 3 years. We've also modeled that out in our fund return profiles. We've been transparent with our LP base and our investors that are backing the fund itself from the very beginning about what our expectations are. We have historical data that shows that our average holding period for any early stage technology company is about 7 or 8 years. So we're quite comfortable with it. And we are mission-driven individuals behind this in the first place, so it means that we're not looking to have some kind of early exit in a 5-year turnaround. This is about transition to a much more holistic and regenerative future, and that takes time. So no, we don't count the pennies in the early stages. We would like to see an outcome at some point. We are reliant on financial returns to keep in the LPs and investors excited and interested in impact investing. So we do want to give returns, but that's over the lifetime of the fund, not within a short turnaround period.
Yeah. Okay. So Philippe, spend, mate. Okay. So Philippe, just tell me, as when you're starting off, what is the biggest anxiety? I mean, is it cash, or is it a sort of sense of being something more than the sum of its parts? As a startup, what keeps you awake at night?
I mean, in the very initial phase, I think it's just the sheer level of overwhelmment, right? Mm-hmm. I think the very interesting step for anybody that is thinking about doing an entrepreneur, I generally would recommend don't do it. Like, it's definitely has been the hardest phase of my life, because initially you're doing everything and most of the time you don't know what you're doing, right? And I think that is especially for us. We had the very big luxury of getting the grant from Google. I don't know how others did it, because that basically fell from the sky. And by the time we started working with Rockstar, I already had a team of 10, 15 people, almost all of them, I would say, smarter than me. And I think that's the biggest need that you need to have as an entrepreneur, is you need to convince other people which are smarter and better than you to join you on your mission. And I think that's the most important part, because don't overestimate yourself. Nobody's good in everything. And I think what me and my co-founder Ivo are very good in is trusting others and then also empowering them and then letting go. For example, I couldn't even tell you what our social media accounts are. Like, we have a CMO, Esther, and she's managing our social media accounts, and I don't know what we're posting on Instagram. I don't have an Instagram account. We might have a TikTok account. I can't even tell you. And I think that's for me the most important thing, to take things out of my head and not to think about it anymore, so that I can really focus on the things that I know I'm really good at and that I can be pushing forward, which is a lot more the strategic vision of the companies and forming the right partnerships, and then not focusing on everything else. And I think that's what I see a lot going wrong with entrepreneurs that can't let go, and they try to control everything and think they're better in things and others, because most of the time you're not. And I think that's a very important lesson to learn very early.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, now, John, Cordulus works to deliver hyperlocal weather data for agriculture and road maintenance as well, I believe. How do you retrieve this hyperlocal weather data? Why is it useful? And can you give it, what's the pitch for the company?
Yeah, excellent question. It comes down to actually our own network of weather stations that we run, own, and provide data from. And that kind of comes into what the pitch or the business model of it is. We're a subscription service where you subscribe to us and you get hyperlocal weather data. And in that data that you subscribe to, we provide you high-quality weather stations. So you're out of the loop of having to buy your own stations. We provide them to you, as many as you want to subscribe for. But there's also a power in it. Once you're inside our network, you get access to all the data through all the stations. And we're proud to say now we're one of Europe's, or Northern Europe's, largest professional networks. And the value we bring to the table here is, I mean, we're a little bit in food and farming here today. If you go to any farmer and say, let's talk about the weather, I'm sure you'll have a really long and fruitful conversation. Weather is just the big topic to talk about. And that's also one of the big impact things in farming that we're always addressing here. Like, when can I spray? When is the right time to harvest? What things are in effect? And having a hyperlocal hook in that is everything. Because rain, you've probably all tried to hear your neighbor say it rained here, or your family it rained here, but it didn't somewhere else and really close. It is just local. Weather is finicky and changes all the time on a hyperlocal scale. And in farming, even more so. So giving the power of the farmer to actually make these key decisions day to day, but also long term, because we're logging everything that happens throughout the whole network, historical data. But the real beauty of what I think the next step of what we're doing, and we've already launched now, is we take all the data, all the open data we have, and have built our own machine learning forecasting model. And that's what we really need, is a really accurate forecasting model, so we can make even more key decisions in the future as well. And that's what we at Cordial is providing to our clients.
Yeah. So there's, I mean, we're recording this on the 20th of July. There's a massive heat wave in Central Europe, although it is, of course, peeing with rain here in Britain. Oh, well, not today, actually, but not far off. How the heck have you got time to talk to me? I mean, surely there must be a massive drain on your resources happening right now, or do you just leave it to the machines?
No, I mean, of course, there is a huge push to move forward. And I think that's one of the things that really drives me, is to move incredibly fast. I feel like we have a huge challenge ahead of us, and we're all feeling it now, both, I mean, the heat, but also farmers are feeling it. I want to move faster than anything else. And that's also why I'm in this game. That's why I went to Rockstar and did all this. They were, you can say, a catalyst to fuel my ambitions. Mm-hmm. And that's, again, thank you for saying I'm busy. I think thank you for giving the kudos. I feel like I wish there was more hours in the day all the time.
So tell us about Rockstar's role in this. You know, if they were helpful, how were they helpful? Were they helpful in developing technology, in your business planning, and connecting you with clients, which I guess is kind of the thing I would really want from anyone coming on board, is, God, how are you going to get me in the door to flog what I've got to somebody new?
I think what I mainly used Rockstar for in the beginning was training myself and using their expertise to kind of build myself up. You can't see my face, but I'm still a younger entrepreneur. This is my first show, you could say. And there's a lot of shortcuts you can take in that journey. And that's what Rockstar kind of gave me. Kind of think of it like, if you tell a young kid, now you have to learn math all by yourself, you'd say that's ludicrous, right? But through Rockstar, you're going to the school of VC, in a sense, and kind of shortcutting your journey a little shorter. Rather than have to make all the mistakes, we can learn from Mark's mistakes. Sorry to throw you under the bus again, but I thought that Philip quote was amazing. So that's what we're doing here, right? We're learning from others' mistakes and also trying to make a few of our own while still having a shoulder to cry on, you could say, right? Yeah. And so that was one part of what Rockstar, especially the accelerator, was all about, is getting myself and our company ready for the even more aggressive VC journey that we all have ambitions to do. And I think later on, it became more of like, I think Priya also opened up about that, the whole network and introductions and giving the confidence to move even faster and forward. I won't bombard Mark with machine learning questions and trying to talk code all night up with him, but he will ping pong with me in terms of the business and how everything else we're doing and stuff like that.
Yeah. And I mean, there must be also be some challenges when working with an accelerator. I mean, you know, not everybody does. It's a choice that you make. Presumably, you give up extra equity to them. Do you have to pay them for some of the services? Is it always worth it, John? I mean, you know, it must come at a cost.
Of course it does. But I don't think that's where the real cost is. I think it's more back to your question before, time. So it's a parallel process, right? But there's only so many hours in a day. So at the one side, you're growing your company. And during the accelerator, you're probably growing even more than you expected because you're getting a push. But at the same time, you have to grow yourself with the accelerator in terms of getting all this knowledge in. So you have to manage both at the same time. And I feel like Rockstar did that very well by giving us time to do our homework, you could say. Yeah. But that is definitely one of the costs of the accelerator. If you're not willing to put the time into it, you shouldn't do it.
Yeah.
You have to be ready mentally and also have a team ready to support you in this growth. Because otherwise you're just getting all the cheat codes, but you have no implementation of them. And that's, I think, the real cost you have to take and make sure you're ready.
So Priya, I mean, this is interesting. You know, you're being accelerated. Is there a cost to this, to be accelerated? Is there a stress cost? Is there an equity cost? How do you see that relationship?
Yeah, for sure. I mean, as Mark has shared, essentially, Rockstar's also an investor. So in the same way that you go through an investment process with any other financier, we do the same. It's just that there's this more at a win-win partnership, I suppose, that is established where they've identified there's certain things. They say, hey, this is a ticket to play. Join our portfolio, we'll help develop you, and then we'll come in again. And if you're doing well, and you know, success will speak for itself, then we'll continue to support you in your fundraising journey. So it's a real boost. I mean, the the accelerator journey. And of course it comes at a cost, but I'll say with John, echo what John says, you only get out as much as you put in, right? Mm. So what Rockstart did really well was apply pressure on us. So they had a team member dedicated to basically following up with us every week saying, hey, have you done your homework? Now we're all adults, but there is a tendency to deprioritize some of these things, right? If they're not needing to be sent out to a buyer, or you don't need to hit that tech development deadline for a partner, you're going to deprioritize it. But yeah, the Rockstar team almost did not let us get away with that. So that meant that we didn't slip through the net.
Yeah, absolutely. Okay, so Mark, back to you again. You know, I've got a great idea. You know, I've sketched it on the back of an old envelope. Maybe you can throw some money at it. How would I start? How do you find the ideas you want to work with, and how do people pitch to you?
Yeah, gosh, that's so I could. I'm trying to think how to answer that one, Stefan. From a statistics perspective, we get so many. Last year we saw 2,500. Pitch decks, put it like that. This year, in the first 4 or 5 months of the year, we saw well over 1,300 pitch decks. We took further conversations with 400 companies. We invited about 100 startups to make a deeper application. We then did further due diligence and interviews, technical interviews with about 50 of them. And we got a mandate from our selection committee. We presented 15 of those 1,200 or 1,300 startups to a selection committee, of which I think 6 were selected and mandated to go forward. So it's incredibly competitive. We love it, but it's also it does mean that we have to be very clear about what it is that we're looking for and how we can add value. The most effective way for a founder to come into contact with us and start talking about potential investment is, and this goes for all, this is the advice I'd give to any individual who's trying to raise capital, new capital, get a referral, get an introduction. Warm introductions work the best because you have context, you've got emotional nuance, you've got similar network there. It works as a first set of precedent. If you come in with a cold application, we will look at it, but it doesn't have the same level of attention. Thereafter, we're going to have a conversation, and we're going to talk about mostly about you as a founder and why you're doing it. We want to make sure that the motivator. I think Philip said it the best. You know, if you're not totally committed to this challenge that you're trying to solve, if you're not 100% bought into your solution and how you want to go forward to fight this challenge or problem, don't do it. That's the first conversation we're having, is like, why are you doing this? What's the motivation? What do you want to get out of this for the long run? And then I can go into boring parts about due diligence process, but it goes from there that we start to look more at the market, at the technology and product and also any traction or proxies for traction that you might be able to show to show that you could, you've got the drive to take something off the ground and launch it.
Yeah. And are you constantly analysing people's propensity for bullshit stroke ambition and trying to pass between the two? I mean, because, you know, I've been part of a couple of companies and yes, there's a fine line to draw sometimes, isn't there?
Yeah, totally. This is where we draw on the wisdom of the crowd a little bit. We have our amazing mentor network to thank and our amazing selection committee to thank here, and together with, like, you know, multiple years of personal experience within the team. We will, for any startup decision, that founding team will have spoken to at least 5 people across the team and mentor pool as a starting point to even get in front of the selection committee. And there needs to be consistent feedback on a qualitative, like the EQ component of a founder is just as important as IQ. So we put a lot of emphasis on that. We get feedback throughout the process, and by the end of it, by the time we come to make an investment decision, we're super excited to work with those individuals because we've really vetted their motivation. And we can see that they're purpose driven, and that drives a lot of a lot of passion and motivation from our side, because we know that they're in it for the long term.
Yeah. Okay, I've got a last question, but I'm going to put it to each one of you. So please keep your answers concise if you can. A lot of our listeners work in the food and agriculture industries. A lot of them are also at uni and coming up with new ideas all the time and waiting to break into either food or agriculture and lots of different areas. And many of them have great ideas. Can you just give us some advice? And I know you've already given us a lot of advice, but what's the one thing that you wish you knew when you dived into the pool of danger and risk that was becoming a startup? Priya, from your experience, what do you hope that other people could get out of it?
I would love to say only work with investors and accelerators that are 100% strategic fit for the company. However, the reality is if you're trying to grow a business in July 2023, then you're facing the realities of the global economy which we're in, which isn't on-site. So it's harder than ever to secure finance, and investors are going to be tighter with their wallets. So just to say that there is no shame when it comes to fundraising in this time. And so to take money when it comes your way is totally understandable. Yeah. However, I would maintain that you should always do your due diligence and always trust your gut. So if you get a bad feeling about an investor or a program, go with that. If you believe that you should have diversity across teams and other portfolio companies, say that. Challenge your investor. Doesn't matter how early stage you are, lead with your values and follow your gut.
Yeah, that sounds very, very sound. John, what advice could you give to early starters?
I think it's a really good question. I think just also accept that you're doing a learning process, accept that things are going to be hard, accept that you won't know everything. And as you go into it, always kind of look back at every meeting or a challenge, what did I learn from this? What did I take from this? It can take a lot of energy, but I think it's very important because you're in a really, really fast time where you have to learn things really, really fast and adapt. And especially when you're talking to accelerators and investors, it can be really hard when you only have an envelope with an idea, but then find out what your big thing that you want to get off the ground with the idea. It doesn't have to be a big revenue. It could just be X amount of clients, or you move so fast. Find your hero metric, right? That you're showing off, that you've proven so far. That can actually help perpetuate your idea.
That sounds very wise. Well, a hero metric. I like the sound of that. Okay, Philippe, what advice could you give to people just kicking off?
I think I would reiterate the first one. Basically, if you're thinking about a startup, think about it twice and really think if this is the one thing you want to dedicate the next 3 years of your life to. Yeah. And then related to that, if this is the case, it's a long one game. It's a marathon. It's not a sprint. So don't focus on quick cash in the beginning. Rather, build things up slowly. And here now I might spoil some chocolate points with Mark, but I would also highly recommend to look beyond VCs. I think for us as impact-driven founders, it's most important that we keep control of the company. And if you take VC money on too early, you risk that, right? Because you will have to take two or three rounds. You will have to give percentages away at all of these rounds. They will push down your valuation as much as they can at every given point. And that's a dangerous game. So I think for us, stuff like the Google Impact Challenge, we never expected we would win it, right? We had barely anything at the point when we won that Impact Challenge. We had a founder scholarship where me and my co-founder got 1,000 euros a month and a few friends that were helping for free. And then suddenly we got 650,000 euros, no strings attached, no reporting, no nothing. This is insane. If we can do this, anybody else can theoretically do this as well. And there's lots of these grants out there. And then in the round where Rockstar got involved for us, we were initially looking at 2 million. And then we got a European Union Horizon grant of 750,000 euros. A lot more reporting to be done, admittedly. And the reporting is the pain in the butt. But it still is money that doesn't cost any equity. And I think any money that you can get without giving equity away is very good money. And that's what I would highly recommend to do. Diversify where your money comes from. And then you can be in a very relaxed position when you talk with VCs. And that's definitely the position that you want to be in. Because if you're in a stressed position, they smell it. And then you're in a bad position yourself.
Excellent. So, Mark, I'm just going to twist the question a little bit for you for the final answer. Rather than saying what do you think people should know before they start, I want to know what would you like to scream at people when they send in another flipping investor deck? What do you want to grab people by the lapels for and say, "What's wrong with you? Why don't you do this?"
Oh gosh, that is such a good question. tell me how you due diligence your own bias. I want to know in your deck why you believe in this beyond the fact that your tummy tells you it's the right way to go. You know, if you haven't got sales, that's fine. If you haven't got a product out or your minimum viable category, fine. Why do you believe in it beyond the fact that your gut tells, like, what research have you done? Who have you spoken to? Especially on the commercial side, the number of decks I get that are 10 pages of product description and then a sketchy image of the team. And then I'm like, right, this is clearly still a concept in a lab. Need to go out in the world and talk to some people and find out if it's going to be useful. I'd love to see that coming through more in initial decks.
Actually build up your case a bit more. Very good. Okay, well, that has been absolutely fascinating. As I say, I know that you're all part of the linked together, but I think you've given some extraordinary insights. So thank you all so much. We've been listening to Mark Durno, Priya Buller, Philippe Burker, and John Smedegaard. Thank you all so much for joining me. I hope you enjoyed that episode of the Food Matters Live podcast. Now, we'd like you to join us in our new initiative, Sustainable Food Week, where we're celebrating the influential people changing the future of food. There are a number of ways to get involved. We've got a digital digest, an in-person forum, and podcast opportunities. It's happening between the 18th and 24th of September. But if you want to be involved, you need to act now. Find out more on the Food Matters Live website or email us at info@foodmatterslive.com. And thank you so much for listening.